From 91.5 KRCC in Colorado Springs, this is Air Check, a show about great music in the Pikes Peak region and beyond. I'm Jake Brownell.
I'm Jeff Beery.
And I'm Vicki Gregor.
On this episode of Air Check, we're joined by Alex Koshak in our Critics Roundtable discussion. John Craigie drops by the 91.5 KRCC studios to play a couple songs and talk about his troubadour lifestyle. Colorado Springs resident Craig Karnick reminisces about his days working the night shift at Motown Records. And we hang out with the Bells of St. Vrain and learn a bit about the art of handbell choirs. All that today on Air Check.
It's time for our musical critics roundtable, the portion of Air Check where we all pick a tune and tell you why we like it, why it's important to us. We've got a special guest in the studio with us today. Mr. Alex Koshak is going to be offering his favorite tune. So a little mix up in the musical critics roundtable. Alex, having worked with local groups like the Flumps, Brufeau, Eros and the Eschaton, Charioteer, and more recently, you've been touring with Esme Patterson, and you ended up back at NPR Tiny Desk, hanging out with Bob Boylan.
Yes, that's right.
Is he a freak?
He's a very sweet man, and he's the real deal. You've seen the Tiny Desk where it has all that stuff behind He's got all these mementos from all kinds of different people. Like, he had a cookie that Daniel Johnston was eating, but then he fell asleep, so he didn't finish it. So that's sitting up there, and it says Daniel Johnston's cookie on it. And then he has this, like, cake that's in, like, a CD, like one of those CD holder things, but it's, like, really old. So, I mean, in that way, maybe he's a little bit of a freak. No, that's totally, that's sentimental value. That's, like, a memento that he'll never...
He didn't give you Joan Baez's half-eaten piece of cake or anything.
He did not. Okay. He gave us, actually, like, a couple bottles of water.
So it was a good experience?
It was great. And that building is amazing. The NPR building in Washington, D.C. was, like futuristic Tokyo... Blade Runner kind of stuff. It was great.
NPR headquarters. All right, so we're going to go around the table here. And Vicki, I think we'll start with you. Alex, we encourage you to offer your input on the songs that you hear during the musical roundtable discussion. You ready?
Yes.
All right. So, Vicki, what are you presenting to the musical roundtable discussion today?
Well, it was hard. There's a lot of new stuff right now that I had to ponder and look at and listen to. But Robin Hitchcock just released a new record. It's self-titled, and it's one that he started working on when he came from England back over the pond, across the pond, to East Nashville. So he's in Nashville, and he meets up with some pretty great people who want to work with him. And what struck me about this song is the intro. So this is Autumn Sunglasses, Robin Hitchcock, from his self-titled brand new release.
Venture to guess that those are real cellos and not some crappy synth replication.
I'm thinking, and I'm hoping it's cello, but I think it's real, whatever it was.
It sounded real to me.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
Well, I don't know anything about Robin Hitchcock. What else can you tell me?
Well,
is that like a glaring omission in my musical vocabulary?
Yes, it is.
Yes, yes, it is, Jake.
And here's why. Because, so we're going back to like 1972 and Robin Hitchcock and the Soft Boys. And, you know, that started kind of a, you know, you can hear the Beatles in there and all the Birds really influenced them. And then they kind of went, you know, even a little pre-punk. Then he's Robin Hitchcock and the Egyptians. And that was a whole different kind of exploration for him. And then Robin Hitchcock just doing what he does because he's prolific. And then he made a group together, Venus 3, which features Peter Buck from REM. That's where Peter Buck ended up. And has had this renaissance of the last, I'm going to say, 4 or 5 years of just making, you know, this part of his life, this autumn part of his life, those records. So you can follow him for 20, 30 years, and that great voice.
Alex, your thoughts on the new Robin Hitchcock album?
I appreciated the intro, like you were saying.
Thanks, Alex. It was incredible.
It's like that drone, the cello drone, kind of spooky, and then busting into the groove, and then comes backwards guitar, weaving in there like a snake. It was great.
The production is really lovely.
The production is fantastic.
And the melody, I mean, this is just one of those, you know, beautifully written pop songs. And you never know your fate.
Thanks, Vicky. Good pick, Robin Hitchcock. Jake, on to you. What have you found for us to discover?
Well, I have found a song by an artist who really needs no help being discovered. He's probably one of the most famous pop musicians in the world right now. But nevertheless, I have no shame in choosing a song by him for this roundtable. The artist is Drake, and this song is called Passion Fruit off of his new album. Or I guess it's actually technically not an album, it's a playlist, but we can talk about that later. Song is Passion Fruit off of Drake's More Life.
Listen, seeing you got ritualistic, cleansing my soul of addiction for now, cause I'm falling apart. Tension between us just like picket fences. You got issues that I won't mention for now, cause we're falling apart. Passionate from miles away, passive with the things you say, passing up on my old ways. I can't blame you, no.
So it's all about the vibe, just smooth and mellow and kind of got a good groove there.
You know, I feel very sexy listening to that.
A different look has come over your face. You know, Jake,
it is very central.
Jeff,
very,
put your shirt back on. Yeah.
You know, Drake doesn't just own this, mm-hmm. that sound. He made this. This is his territory. I love that Blue Nile kind of, like the underneath to all of this is reminds me of all that cool kind of 80s kind of synth stuff, and he brings it into his Drake world, really.
Yeah, I'm wondering who made this beat. It's really great.
Drake has always kind of been known as a songwriter, but also as a curator, and as somebody who just sort of is about curating this left field kind of R&B and hip hop and drawing a lot on kind of global influences. And in here there's artists featured from the UK, Skepta, this sort of grime artist, people from around the world, and really again sort of drawing on all these different influences. And it's a sort of interesting evolution of the concept of an artist release in the digital age, this idea of, you know, I'm not giving you an album, I'm giving you a playlist, this collection of moods and sounds and snippets and things that inspire me.
Alex, this is a produced sound, and I don't, when I think of Alex Koshak, musician Alex Koshak, I don't think of a produced sound like this. Am I wrong? I mean, how does this suit you?
Well, I think our definitions of production are slightly different.
All right.
But I think I know what you mean, in that it's like shiny production.
Yeah.
It's very glossy. It's got the glossy finish. I prefer the matte finish. However, I did like that.
I thought that was great.
Yeah. Especially that beat. I mean, it was amazing. It was perfect. You know, when you hear something perfect like that, it's satisfying to hear something perfectly put together like that.
All right, so we've heard Vicky's choice, Robin Hitchcock, Jake's choice of Drake. Alex Kosak, what's your choice for the roundtable?
My choice is a song called No Big Bang by a band from Washington, D.C. called Priests. D.C. punk rock, fierce, and I don't know. I don't like this word, but it's relevant. It's like, they live in D.C. Their album came out right after Trump got elected. The album is called Nothing Feels Natural. It's just got all these themes of dissonance in the massive culture of America, and thinking deeply about where we are and how we got here. And
all right, let's have a listen.
Awesome.
Yeah, I didn't know about these guys. I was on tour and I had played in San Francisco, and I was visiting a friend. I had a day off the day after that, and then he was like, I'm going to the show later, do you want to come? And I was like, oh man, I'm at shows like every night, like I don't know. Are they good? And he was like, yeah, I think they're pretty good, you should come check it out. And so I went with him, and it was amazing. The whole night was amazing. It was all like feminist punk rock bands, and these guys headlined, and they blew me away. I was really impressed, just the energy that they have. You can hear the record, and you know that's like a little snippet, that's like a light dose, but when you see these people making this music, it's like we were talking about, it's like the difference in production, like this is like a, like this is raw, this
it's pretty
is
raw, yeah.
Yeah, it's something to behold.
Instantly, I thought of Sonic Youth a little bit.
Yeah. Bull in the Heather kind of feel. I also think it reminds me of that Velvet Underground song, Murder Mystery, where the vocals are just sort of like attacking you, and there's actually two different vocals going on, like saying all these words at the same time. And it's cool. It's interesting to hear a song that works like that, because all the pieces have to be very, very carefully chosen, you know, like that bass line is just doing the same thing the whole time until the bridge. And it's just one note.
Name of the band again?
Band is called Priests.
Priests.
Yeah.
Make all of me as if it never happened in the first place. No birds. No birds. No big bang. No big bang. No big bang. No big bang. No big bang.
Alex Kosak, thanks for coming in. Really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
Alex Kosak is a multi-talented, multi-instrumentalist from Colorado Springs. He plays with a number of local bands, and he recently wrapped up a national tour with Esme Patterson. You can see Alex performing with Esme in NPR's Tiny Desk series on our website, krcc.org. La 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 la
98.5 KRCC in Colorado Springs. This is AirCheck, a show about great music in the Pikes Peak region and beyond. I'm Jake Brownell.
I'm Jeff Beery.
And I'm Vicki Greger. We are so fortunate to have incredible musicians drop into the 91.5 KRCC studios to play and talk with us. And last week, John Craigie came in during his Colorado tour. John is a modern-day troubadour. He's been traveling and playing music for most of the past 10 years. Here he is playing a few songs from his new album, No Rain, No Rose, and speaking with Jake Brownell.
This is John Craigie. I'm going to play a song called Broken off my new album, No Rain, No Rose.
Sends out for prayer to Jesus. Yeah, your mama knows, and she sends out for prayer to Jesus. And the pretty old women know, but they don't want to pick up the pieces when you're broken, when you're broken. Oh. Your daddy knows, and he says this too shall pay. All your daddy knows, and he says this too shall pay. But you wake up in the morning, trying hard not to look back. Oh, when you're broken, when you're broken. Tries to warm your skin. Yeah, the highway knows, and it tries to warm your skin. And your guitar knows, try to put you back together again. Oh, when you're broken, when you're broken, when you're broke, oh, when you're broke.
John Craigie here in the studio. Thanks for being here.
Thanks, man. Thanks for having me.
That was beautiful what you just played. So you're here on tour, passing through, heading down to play a show in Pueblo, just played in Denver. You're often sort of billed as a modern-day troubadour, and it sort of speaks to your performance style, I think, and other things about you. But I want to just sort of ask you, does that resonate with you, that description, and what does it mean to you?
Yeah, I think that's a good description. I'm definitely modeling myself after that, though my influences were kind of that, not just in music, but in lifestyle. You know, when I was my early 20s, I was reading a lot of those books. I read Woody Guthrie's Bound for Glory. And that book is cool because it's not so much about his music, it's more about his travels and like his, like for a long time, he wasn't even playing music. He was just like being like a bum and, you know, and riding the rails and stuff. And so that was very, like, romantic to me. I grew up in the suburbs in Los Angeles, and it was pretty square, like, childhood-wise, and I didn't know nothing against my folks, but, like, they just had things to do, you know. So when I was a kid, they got National Geographic, I would cut out the pictures and put them on my walls, you know, like, I liked the idea of something other than Los Angeles. So I
had some wanderlust.
Yeah, so when I got this job, you know, that's part of it I loved, you know, I liked the shows, but I liked the idea of being paid to travel. And there's always that kind of new horizon, you know. I tell my friends that who are just starting, it's like, you can have a good show or a bad show. The next day, it doesn't matter. The next day, it's like all about that night, you know. So you could have the best show of your life, which is awesome that night, wake up in the morning, it's all about tonight's show. You could have the worst show, it doesn't matter. So, and it's cool. It's like every day is kind of like Christmas, you know. You don't know what's going to happen. You might get a lump of coal. You might get that Lego set you wanted. You know? It depends.
And you've been kind of traveling and performing for how long now?
Well, it's 7 years professionally. And then I had a few years before that where I was just out there kind of doing the Guthrie thing where I had shows, but it was more about the journey. Doing like a lot of coffee shops, bars, like whatever I could get kind of stuff. A lot of background music. Just something to make it like I had a purpose, you know?
Yeah.
But right around 2010 is when my first sort of like good album came out or decent album came out. And that's when things started becoming a little more professional. So,
and, you know, the Woody Guthrie comparison is interesting. And also I kind of, especially in watching some of your performances, Arlo Guthrie comes to mind as well. This sort of, you're a storyteller as much as you are a musician in certain respects. And how has that evolved for you? Is that something that's kind of always been a part of how you've wanted to approach writing music? Or is that something that's developed as you've kind of performed more and learned to engage with a crowd and that sort of thing?
Yeah, it was, when I was younger, I was not musically talented, but I was like the guy, the story guy, you know, like with the gang went out and something happened, then we saw one of the other guys from the gang who wasn't there. They would be like, Craigie, you tell the story. I was the good storyteller. But I grew up in the 90s when, like, all my musical, like, you know, influences were like Pearl Jam, Green Day, where I would go to these shows and they would never say a word. So for me, music was like a very serious thing, taken seriously. And so when I started, for the first couple of years, I started playing and doing shows at coffee shops or whatever. I wouldn't talk. I didn't know you could. But it's funny you bring up Arlo Guthrie. I saw him early on, like when I was about 19, I think, in Santa Cruz, when I was living there. And I had never seen a show like that. I was like, oh, you can, I didn't know you could do this. And so pretty quickly I was able to incorporate that. And back then I wasn't that, still not that good at music. And so people really liked the storytelling part because that was something that I was good at. So they were like, I like when you talk. The songs are okay. You know? I used to joke and just say the songs are in between times when I'm just waiting until I talk again, like a break from the talking.
Let's talk about the new album,
yeah.
No Rain, No Rose. What were you going for with this album, and do you think it represents something new for you?
Yeah, definitely. I had moved to Portland coming off of a time of just being nomadic. You know, I had no specific address, which I was really liking. But I got pulled into the Portland scene, and I was making all these new friends, a lot of great musicians there, you know. And just that was adding to my songwriting, that sort of community aspect. And so when it was time to record it, I had moved into this house with my friend Nico, who plays with Shook Twins, and my friend Tyler, who plays with Fruition. And we had talked about someone should make an album here. And I think I was just the first one who had the songs or whatever. The title comes from this old Buddhist saying. He says, no mud, no lotus. And I remember I was talking to one of my housemates. I wanted to steal that, but make it more Portland. That's essentially, the songs represent the sort of collection of songs and a community that went through some sad times, some hard stuff, and then sort of like coming out of it together. I think that's kind of what I was trying to go for.
Well, it's beautiful, and I'd love to take it out with another song from the new album. John Craigie, thanks so much for coming in. It's really been a pleasure.
Thank you. This is John Craigie. Playing my song, I Am California, off my new album, No Rain, No Rose.
You try to drown your sorrows. You shouldn't have taught them how to swim. Now you are right back where you began. Winter skies approaching, all alone in the waiting wasteland. Alone is the only way that they let you in. So drink all my wine, cut all my trees, make love on my beach, yeah, smoke all my weed. I am California, can't you see? Wherever you roam, you always want me. And we struggle with our lovers. We don't know what to let it. Cause the new ones pay for the old ones' sin. Blinded by your shadows, faded on your love. You don't know how deep you are. Here you get pulled back up. So drink all my wine, cut all my trees, make love on my beach, yeah, smoke all my weed. I am California, can you see? Wherever you roam, you're always. Soak in my springs, conquer my mountains if that's what you need. I am California, can't you see? Wherever you roam, you always want me. Yeah, you always want me. 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 Yeah, you always want me. Always want me. Oh, oh, oh. Oh, oh, oh.
That was Jake Brunell speaking with John Craigie. Craigie's latest album is called No Rain, No Rose. You're listening to Air Check on 91.5 KRCC.
Colorado Springs resident Craig Karnick had a front row seat to one of the great eras in American music, Motown Records in its heyday in 1960s Detroit. Now a financial planner, Karnick put himself through college in Detroit back in the 60s, working the night shift at Motown Studios. He sat down with Jeff Bury to tell the story.
Born and raised Detroit, Michigan, Motor City, Motown as they say, went to Wayne State University, needed a job. Went to work for the university. They had quite a TV and radio studio. WDET was their FM radio studio. Oh, yeah. And I would split between the TV and the radio station. And I happened to be in the radio studio, and there was a bulletin board with various sundry things that end up on a bulletin board. And in the corner was a little, like a business card, indicating that Motown was looking for a recording engineer. Call this number. And so I did. The gentleman that answered was kind of a legend in Motown. His name was Lawrence Horn. Lawrence was a real force there at Motown. I went into his office, I sat down, he said, I'm going to play you a recording, three recordings of different instruments. I want you to identify them. Okay. So he played the first recording and he said, what's that? And I said, well, that's a violin. Played the next recording, what's that? I said, I'm pretty sure that's a viola. Played the next recording, what's that? Cello, you're hired.
That was it? That was the interview?
That was the interview. I was able to identify three stringed instruments from an audio recording, and he said, you're hired. My first opportunity to ply my trade came a couple weeks later. About 10:30 at night, I was told what was going to happen. Six musicians would be coming to lay down the string tracks for multiple songs. And lo and behold, six musicians show up in tuxedos. Mm-hmm. It was after the Detroit Symphony had played a concert. In come two string players, one with a Stradivarius, two viola players, and two cello players. And they set up, and without getting too far into the technology at this point, we were to lay down the string tracks on about a dozen songs. They had the sheet music. They took one look at the sheet music. Bing, bang, boom. We laid everyone down.
12 there was, songs?
Yeah, there was no redoing it. They got it all first time through. Motown had four houses. These were residential homes, and one was an office. One was the mastering studio where Lawrence Horn held sway, did all the mastering of these multi-track recordings. In that building was also in the attic was located the legendary echo chamber that Motown built, the attic echo chamber. And then there was another building that had accounting and public relations and various other things. But you had those four buildings, and the one with the recording studio was labeled Hitsville, USA. Remember, in those days, there was no appreciable degree of FM. It was AM.
Right.
The technology in terms of sound reproduction on AM was very narrow. So if you wanted to create a new sound for AM, you had to do something different. And along with the instrumental things and the multiple tracks and the overdubbing, Motown created a way of sound compression that allowed the vocals to be crystal clear.
Through the mirror of my mind, time after time, I see reflections of you and me.
If you go back to a 50s recording, you typically would hear the music in the background and the vocal in the foreground, often with a lot of reverb. Well, Motown took that, reversed that. They put the reverb on the music. The vocals were clean and enhanced, oftentimes with a little more higher frequency pitch. They had a whole thing with dynamic compression, which made the louder things softer and the softer things louder, so that you could hear those lyrics.
Keep holding on Now, I'm curious, Craig, where you were in this. I mean, I'm picturing a young Craig Carnick still in college. You showed up at 10 o'clock at night? Did you work an eight-hour shift? Was that expected?
No,
that you
worked about 10 hours.
10 hours a shift. 10 hours.
Well, mostly, most of the time for me, there was nothing going on. So I did a fair amount of studying, none of which was of
any... Cracking the books at Motown.
Way, well, yes, but I would tell you that it didn't do my grade point average much good.
So these artists would go up, they'd play the symphony, they'd come in, you would set them up in the studio,
set them up in the studio, record it. Absolutely clean, no kind of compression, no kind of equalization, clean, clean, clean. And then later on in the mastering process, all that stuff would be brought together. Right. That's when the echo, the attic echo, would be added from the mysterious place on top of one of the buildings in the attic, where they had gone up and plastered everything in a long, long hall attic and placed speakers and microphones at different places, and it was real Grand Canyon echo, as opposed to the echo that was popular at that time, done with springs and delays of things. It really had a much better flavor to it.
Who are you credited for engineering? So many hits came out of Motown. You have to be on a liner note somewhere, Craig.
Wrong. I'm not on any liner note anywhere.
What?
The famous guys, of course, who wrote so many of those songs, Holland Dozier and Holland, which, I mean, they were machines that turned out all the songs, oftentimes not knowing who would record them. My job was actually pretty peripheral, which was just to do that string recording and serve as kind of a guy on duty when some of the other stars would come in, recording people would come in to practice or try out things. So I didn't actually, you won't find my name anywhere that I'm aware of, maybe on the Detroit police blotter, but you won't find it at anything at Motown.
Craig, there are so many legendary figures that passed through Motown. Diana Ross, the Supremes, the Jackson 5, Gladys Knight and the Pips. Do you have any recollections of any of these people that passed through the Motown studios?
People stick out in my mind, of course. Smokey Robinson was he and his wife. His wife sang in the backup group. And I can remember having, they'd bring in a bucket of chicken and a couple of six packs. And we'd sit there, record a few songs, and then eat and drink some beer. And I mean, nothing got out of hand. It was just a fun experience. And I do remember a motorcycle ride on the back of Marvin Gaye's motorcycle down East Grand Boulevard to downtown Detroit, which...
That is great.
Yeah, looking back on it, it probably wasn't a good idea.
Were you wearing a helmet, Craig?
No, there were no helmets. No, there were no helmets. And speed was of the essence in Detroit.
So how long did you work there?
Worked there for just about 18 months.
A year and a half?
Just about 18 months. But, you know, that was a wonderful, as I said, a wonderful time in Detroit. Even though there were things going on in Detroit, especially racially. Right. And plus you had the changing nature of the automobile industry, which had yet to start to decline. And you had the exodus from Detroit brought about by... the construction of freeways, basically, which made the flight to the suburbs possible. So Detroit, I graduated from high school in 1964. Mumford High School. We're cheering for you, Mumford High. Anyhow, I graduated in 64, but the whole city of Detroit really started to collapse shortly thereafter. And the flight...
And struggling to this day, immensely.
Struggling to this day. And, of course, there's a whole separate story about Detroit and the automobile industry and why that all happened. But it was in 1967, 68. It was a really interesting time to be alive and be in Detroit. It was a great experience.
Craig Karnick, thank you for coming in and telling us the story. This is great.
You're welcome. You're welcome.
Thank you.
That was Colorado Springs resident Craig Karnick recounting his time working the night shift at Motown Records in the mid-1960s. You're listening to 91.5 KRCC's Air Check. Your support is what makes this local programming possible. It took me by surprise, I must say. From 91.5 KRCC in Colorado Springs, this is Air Check, a show about great music in the Pikes Peak region and beyond. I'm Jake Brownell.
I'm Jeff Beery.
And I'm Vicki Greger.
For our last segment, we're going to be diving into the wonderful world of handbells. Handbells have been around for centuries, originally invented for church bell tower players to practice their songs. Now they're usually found in church handbell choirs, where groups of musicians play carefully choreographed arrangements on the tuned bells. For this story, Vicki and Jake paid a visit to a local handbell choir to learn more about the music.
I can hear it all, sir.
The Bells of St. Vrain Handbell Ensemble rehearses every Tuesday night in a classroom in the basement of First Congregational United Church of Christ in Colorado Springs.
Hello, come in.
Thank you. Hi, guys.
Hi.
Thanks for letting us crash here.
Absolutely, guys.
Vicki, Jake.
A dozen people stand side by side behind a long table, which is covered with a row of shiny brass bells. The group recently had a performance, and now they're beginning the work of learning a new batch of songs for their next show.
So basically all of this is music that is not yet ready for anything, so just keep that in mind.
Mandy Todd is the group's leader and the musical director at First Congregational.
Okay, starting from the beginning?
Oh, no, wait.
Yes. Do you have a bleeper? Because sometimes there's a lot of cursing.
We can bleep, yeah.
All right, here we go. One, two, and three, and one, and two.
Handbell choirs are common church music ensembles. The Bells of St. Vrain is First Congregational's group and has been performing at the church since the 80s. If you've never seen a handbell ensemble, it's a sight to behold. Each performer plays only a few bells, a few notes on the scale. They follow sheet music and strike their bells when their notes come along, employing a variety of techniques to elicit different sounds.
You know, you can just ring a bell, and then it sits there, and the sound sits there. It doesn't look very pretty, and it doesn't sound quite as interesting. But especially if you have long notes, half notes, whole notes, the goal is to have kind of a circular motion, and then it changes the sound as the sound kind of gets louder, as the bell goes towards the audience, and then comes back, it's a little bit softer. And then when you're bell is still ringing, but you don't want it to be, you touch your shoulder and it stops the sound. So that kind of circular motion both looks cool and helps to get the sound that we're aiming for. Sometimes we use mallets. Sometimes we do what's called a mart, where you take the bell and thunk it on the table, or a Mart lift, where you do that same thing but lift immediately. So there are lots of different ways to play the bells, which it's very exciting to see how a composer uses different techniques.
Heard you do, you know, classical pieces, jazz, you know, church songs, you know, songs from the Renaissance. You're the conductor, you're the music director. Does that all come from, here's what I'd like us to try, or do people say, hey, could we try some Zeppelin?
We've not done any Zeppelin, but I don't know, I'd be up for that. We have done some pretty exciting things. We did the Phantom of the Opera one year, you know, a wide variety. I use the scripture text and liturgical time period in the church calendar to make decisions about what we play in worship. But then at the end of each year, program year, so this year on June 2nd, we do a concert, and that is kind of like our greatest hits. So this year, June 2nd at 7 p.m., First Congregational Church, come hear these bells live. It's going to be awesome.
Most of the members of the ensemble have played other instruments in the past and can read music well. But they say performing in a handbell choir is unlike any other form of music. Polly Strovink is a longtime member of the group.
I've been ringing bells for 30 years now, and I think I do this because it's 12 people playing one instrument, and I haven't ever found anything else where I'm just part of an instrument. I'm not my own instrument.
Like, none of these bells would, none of the parts would really sound like anything on their own.
No, they wouldn't sound like anything at all.
Handbells are meant to be played as a group, so learning the parts together is vital, which is why the group meets every week to rehearse. They run through pieces over and over again, working to make sure that every note and every rhythm is just right.
Let's do that clapping your part, please. Bells down, clap your part, starting in 39. One, two, three. One and two, three. One, two and three, and one, two, three, four, five, six. One and two, three, and one and two and three, and stop.
You can count your heart out, but if the person who plays the note in front of you doesn't play it, it is so hard to get in there. You're so dependent on the people around you. And so, and that's why it's so important that everyone is here, that we are rehearsing together, because if you miss your note, it's not just that one note, it can throw off an entire section of a piece. So we're so dependent on each other. Really gelling is important.
Mandy says that reliance on the group is part of the appeal, and it breeds a special bond among the members.
I love the idea that, you know, we come together to do this thing, and there is that spiritual component, mm-hmm. and I think there's something powerful about us being together in a way that we're not together anywhere else in our lives. We're not doing this kind of a thing, so it is pretty powerful.
Other members of the ensemble, like Barry and Lisa, agree.
And we are just family, and it's nice to, it's like Thanksgiving dinner every Tuesday. You know, you're, it's the fellowship, mm-hmm. you know, it's just being with the people that you love.
Well, and it truly is fellowship. This is the only thing I do outside of work, is this group, and it's like, I can't wait till Tuesday. I gotta see my folks. You know, it's like coming home. Yeah.
Thank you.
You can see the Bells of St. Vrain Handbell Ensemble in action the third Sunday of every month at the First Congregational United Church of Christ in Colorado Springs. For AirCheck, I'm Vicki Gregor.
That's it for this edition of AirCheck from 91.5 KRCC. You can see local musician Alex Koshak playing NPR's Tiny Desk series, pictures of John Craigie's in-studio performance, and visit Motown on our website, krcc.org. You can also make a pledge online or by calling us at 719-473-4801.